And we are going to begin again in the book of Exodus. And we're in chapter 17. Now, there's a lot of things in chapter 17, but it's not really a long chapter. I'll make a few comments about it, and we'll go on. But there's a few things I find fascinating within it. As the time approaches for Shavuot, I'll have a complete layout to the very best of my ability of the events I see written from the time they left Egypt to the time they were at Mount Sinai. All right? It's a very long, long research paper. And I still always find new things in there as I go back all this thing year after year and year after, but you go, I missed that one. So you might ask God, if you wish, to open up my mind, open up my eyes to see exactly what is written. And so that's all I want to tell you, that because I'm going to go back to 16th chapter again, but not today. But a very important 16th chapter gives more information than you can imagine of the timing of what took place. So anyway, 17th chapter of Exodus.
All the congregation of the people of Israel moved on from the wilderness of Sin by stages according to the commandment of the Lord and camped at Rephidim. But there was no water for the people to drink. Therefore, the people quarreled with Moshe and said, "Give us water to drink." Moshe said to them, "Why do you quarrel with me? Why do you test the Lord?" But the people thirsted there for water, and the people grumbled against Moshe and said, "Why do you bring us up out of Egypt to kill us and our children and our livestock with thirst?" So Moshe cried to the Lord, "What shall I do with this people? They are almost ready to stone me." And the Lord said to Moshe, "Pass on before the people, taking with you some of the elders of Israel, and take in your hand the staff with which you struck the Nile, and go. Behold, I will stand before you there at the rock at Horeb, and you shall strike the rock, and water shall come up out of it, and the people will drink." And Moshe did so in the sight of all the elders of Israel. And he called the name of the place Massah and Meribah, because of the quarreling of the people of Israel, and because they tested the Lord by saying, "Is the Lord among us or not?" Then Amalek came up and fought with Israel at Rephidim. So Moshe said to Yehoshua, "Choose for us men and go out and fight with Amalek. Tomorrow I will stand on the top of the hill with the staff of God in my hand." So Yehoshua did as Moshe told him and fought with Amalek, while Moshe, Aharon, and Hur went up to the top of the hill. Whenever Moshe held up his hand, Israel prevailed. And whenever he lowered his hand, Amalek prevailed. But Moshe's hands grew weary, so they took a stone and put it under him, and he sat on it, while Aharon and Hur held up his hands, one on each side, and the other on the other side. So his hands were steady until the going down of the sun. And Yehoshua overwhelmed Amalek and his people with the sword. Then the Lord said to Moshe, "Write this as a memorial in a book, and recite it in the ears of Yehoshua, that I will utterly blot out the memory of Amalek under all of heaven." And Moshe built an altar and called the name of it, "The Lord is my banner," saying, "A hand upon the throne of the Lord. The Lord will have war with Amalek from generation to generation."
This is a very short chapter. Any comments?
In verse 7, it says, because they tempted Yahweh. What does that mean, they tempted him?
We'll talk about that, yeah. It's not a good translation, the word tempted. Because it's used in another location, the 16th chapter, which we'll go over that a little bit, but not much. Just a sentence or two at the most. No other comments? Well, it's going to be a short session.
In verse 7, what does Massah and Meribah, what do those names have meaning? Because it says because of the contention of the children of Israel. So what are those words?
We'll talk about those two words. They're real simple words to understand. We'll talk about that in a minute. Yeah.
Weren't there two times that Moses was told to hit the rock? I mean, this is the first one.
The second time he was told to speak to it and not hit it.
Yeah. It's a different rock than this one. By quite a bit different rock.
Since we're still a generation, who's Amalek this week?
We'll talk about this week. I'll tell you who he is, but I won't tell you this week. Because I don't know where he's at this week. But it's a play on words. As I understand it now, I've talked about many, many times that this is the action of God's actions. He brings these people to a point to do something with them. Another question?
12, it says Aaron and Hur. Do we have any other mention of Hur in here?
We'll talk about him as well. Very fascinating man. There's about three places that name is used, but basically on two places in the book of Genesis, which is really, I mean not Genesis, but Exodus, that man is this. Exodus. But we'll talk about that as we go on. Good questions, because I have them all written down. Because you know why? I have to ask them myself. Not because you're going to ask me, because I have to ask myself so I can understand a little bit more about what is going on. So start out with, we have the kind of full location of where they're at, all right? It says in the wilderness of Sin. Now, I told you last week what that word is. It's not the word we use today meaning, quote, sin and transgression or iniquities. It's spelt differently. And what does that word mean? Remember? Thorny. Thorny place. Nothing grows there except thorns and thistles, in a sense, biblically speaking. And God sent them there. And that was a big territory, by the way, very large. We'll talk about the location of it in a little while. And so we know that where they're at now, they're in an area where basically Mount Sinai is there as well. And Mount Horeb is there. And even the rock is there. We'll talk about that. What does Sinai mean? A thorn. That's all it is a thorn. It's a thorny place. That means nothing grows there except thorns. So it's not the most lush place. You remember some of you were here when Daniel talked about the two mountains in the book of Joshua. One was lush and beautiful, gorgeous mountain, and then was stony, no good. And he had built the altar on the stony one, remember? Or the bald one, as they call it, meaning that nothing grew on it. So God does this. He sends these people to places where there's nothing there. It's like when they went to live in this wilderness, there's nothing there. Now, it's not that they wandered there. God sent them there. Remember, the cloud, when it moved, they went where the cloud moved. When the cloud stopped, they stopped. And for 40 years, that went on for 40 years. We'll talk about that when we get later on in the book of Numbers. We're not there yet. So we have here, now, of course, Moses was a little bit upset. They're going to kill him. Right? They're gonna stone me, he said, verse 4. Now what was Elohim's response? What was Yahweh's response? That's a very interesting trick. What's wrong? Go before the people arrive to a certain place, basically, we'll talk about it in a minute, and take with thee the elders of Israel. So we had 12 elders and Moses, one each one of the tribes, and Moses. And it says, and thy rod, the rod that you used to smote or to smite the river. Okay, never turned to blood. and take it in thy hand and go. Verse 6, very, very interesting phrase here. Behold, I will stand, in sense, in front of you, upon the rock. So here's this rock. He's standing on top of the rock. He's not standing by the rock. He's standing on top of the rock. Right? And he says, it's the rock in Horeb. Horeb. And thou shalt smite the rock. You're going to hit it. Right? Now it's interesting why he told him to hit it. We'll get to that point. Very fascinating in a minute. Smite the rock. And there shall come forth water. Now, we look at that and we say, oh, it's a great miracle. Right? Why did God do this? Why in the place where there's thorns and thistles and there's no water, why did he do this? Now, remember, the Apostle Paul says that the rock followed them. The rock that was hit followed them. And it says that rock was the Messiah. What? The rock? He just split the thing open, water came out. Did the rock also travel with them? Okay. What was the object of the water? Oh, so they could have something to drink. Yes.
I was saying, and out of his belly would flow rivers of living water. Is this what he's referring to? Or is this part, first shadow of it?
You're close, but we're not there yet. This is a fascinating timing of when this took place. Passover had gone, right? The lamb was killed at 3 o'clock in the afternoon of the 14th. It was eaten when the sun went down, right? In the book of Exodus. So we know that has happened. And then something happened on the third day, which we will talk about much later. And they had to have a special sacrifice on the third day. Where were they located on the third day? On the edge of the wilderness, called Etam, or Etam. And then, what's in front of them? Nothing. Nothing. And they travel by day, travel by night, travel by day, travel by night, travel by day, until they reach the other side, where God was taking them. Remember we went to that yes last week. Now we crossed over and we talked about them on the as they danced after they got back out and they saw the Egyptians were killed, so on and so forth. We'll go through all that. And so here now we're at this particular column. That's a really odd thing. Remember, he had first place he sent them after they crossed over the Red Sea. He took them to a place where the water was deadly. You remember that? They didn't wander there. Moses didn't take them there. The cloud took them there. And they got sick. What was the object? Well, so I'll give you two commandments, he says. One of them is, I am your healer. So God told Moses, take a piece of tree or whatever you want to call it. Some people argue what it is. I don't care. In all cases, just as a tree, the same kind. Threw it into the water, and it became clean. Then they were able to drink clean. So God was in the process of cleansing them. Water cleanses from the inside out. Because they're thirsty. Same thing here, for them to drink. Get something in to clean the inside out. Right? Well, we can use water to wash the outside. We understand that. And when we get there, we'll get there, because they also use this water to clean the outside of themselves as well. But we're not there yet. Then this thing that Moses said something, he called the place Massah. Very odd name. What does Massa? What it says here, and Meribah. Now Meribah, what is that? Or Meribah, I don't know how to pronounce that. One is because of the striving, the contention, the quarreling against whom? Whom? Moses. So Moses named it because they were doing it against him. Now, remember he went to God and said, they got to kill me, right? And then he says, he also named it Meriboth. What does Meriboth mean? And he says, of the children of Israel, because they, and that's that word, your translations have the word tempted. Technically speaking, it's not tempting, it's proving, putting them to a test. This particular God, remember, God took them out, and he said to them in the previous chapter, when he says, behold, I will rain bread from heaven for you. We have not talked about the manna yet. I will talk about that much later. And the people shall go out and gather a certain rate every day. Why? Why do this? Oh, because I care about them. And they learn to appreciate me because I gave them bread or manna, as it's called. And they're going to appreciate me. We'll talk about that word much later. Basically, the word manna can mean, what is it? Or also can mean, other translations, is this it? Is this all we get? Remember, they only had it in the morning. It didn't last in the afternoon. It rotted and was no good. So that's all they got. And he said now, this is 16th chapter, verse 4, if you want to go there. He said, I'm going to do this. They're going to gather bread every single day, or they're going to gather manna. Bread is a word meaning not just physical bread, like we think of bread today. It means food, given to something for them to eat, to consume. It's about anything. We use that phrase, you know, when you go to break bread with your friends, that's old 1611 English. That meant you went there and you had supper or dinner or lunch, whatever you had, with it. It wasn't just bread. He says, that I may prove, here's the word prove, same word that's used here in the 17th chapter, and because they are prove, they want to test God out, find out whether he really is, what that statement says there in verse 17th chapter, verse 7, that Yahuwah or God among us or not. They go to test him out. Prove that God is here. Prove that God is here. Prove that God is here. Right? Oh, what happened? Do you remember? Verse 8. 17th chapter, verse 8. You're going to prove me? You're going to test me out? I'm going to send you to war. Pretty powerful words, aren't they? Pretty messy thing. You want to test me out? Remember, they couldn't get in the promised land because how many times did they test him or prove him to find out if he is really the God that claims to be? How many times was it? Ten. Same number as the Ten Commandments, same number as the Ten Plagues, same number as the tithe, same number, meaning something of a test. We went to last week, we talked about Malachi, where the Levites were told by God, test me now here with the tithe, the tenth part. Okay? So it's something that says, this is it. Prove me now whether or not I will bless you. If you do that, you Levites, you priesthood, do what you're supposed to do with that tenth part that the people are giving you, and if you don't, bad news for you. Right? Now let's look at, remember the plagues? The tenth one was the worst one of the bunch, wasn't it? Let's look at the Ten Commandments. We'll go, I'm not there yet. What's the last one? Huh?
Yes.
No, I meant the Ten Commandments.
Oh. Do not covet.
Piece of cake, right? We could do that easy, right? We could not. That's easy one. That's the one the Apostle Paul wrote about in the book of Romans, rather. That's the one he said, oh, impossible. And he said, oh, wicked man than I am. Yes. What's your question?
Okay, so the idea is here he's saying to the people, why are you tempting me?
Why are you testing
me? And yet at the same time later he says, prove me now that I will not pour you forth a blessing.
Right.
So is God contradictory?
No.
Well,
he tested them first. He says, I'll bring bread down to test them whether they, what was that exact phrase? Whether they will walk in, very important, my law or my Torah, not Torot, Torah, one law, or not. Now, it's very fascinating that in Hebrew, that is a one-letter word. Yes, Bill. Jeff.
Well, to address Ann's question, there is a difference between the type of testing or challenging that you see there in Exodus 17, because one of the things that they're challenging is like, is God with us or not?
Yeah.
That sort of a testing is different
That's
than what you see related to the tithe, because that's about showing the faithfulness of God and going along with and understanding that God is faithful and just seeing how faithful he is by continuing to walk through what he's talking about. So one is a approaching God, as it says, with a high hand or in an affront to him with arrogance. And the
this
other
is
one
two,
is
three.
Kind of walking along with what his instructions are.
It's testing whether or not God is with us or not. That's the issue in that particular verse. Okay? That's self-explanatory when you relook at it. But eighth verse is a very fascinating phrase. After they said that, and Moses named the two places. Oh, I didn't go through that, did I? I'm sorry. Massa means, basically, to test or to prove. They're testing or they're proving. They're testing God out. That's what that word, first word of Massa means. They're going to test out. They're going to find out if God is a God of his word or God is a liar. Put it in simple English. Yes.
Massa and Meribah, are they pretty much the same thing?
Oh, that one is called strife and contention. In other words, they first were testing out, proving whether God was with them or not, and they went to quarrel and strife against Moses. Meribah three means to strife or to go against, to have contention with, or to quarrel, as he translated that in his translation, means to quarrel. So it's two things he named them. One of them was to test God, or to prove whether God is with them or not, right? The second one is you're arguing against, because what were they going to do? They're going to stone him, he said. They were going to kill Moses. That's what stoning does. At least that's what I understand what stoning does. You keep throwing at them until they're dead. Well, Amalek. Now, it's an interesting word. Now, we know it's an individual, and it was his men. So who is Amalek? Actually, it starts with an ayin. And you've heard the words of Sodom and Gomorrah. Gomorrah. It's a really, really hard sounding guttural sound. It's like in our English, I told somebody, we cannot pronounce in our English language when there is a G and H together. We don't know how to pronounce it, so we do silence. It's silent. I wonder why it's silent, because it's the same thing as ayin. It's silent. Can't pronounce the thing. It's too hard to pronounce, so they leave it blank. You can have a verb after it, or that's just fine, but they can't pronounce it. It's the same exact letter, but it's translated into English as the G and the H. And when you have Sodom and Gomorrah, it starts with a G and an H. Same thing. Well, I don't start with an H, but it's got that hard sound of a G. So it's a really hard sound of a G. Don't ask me how to pronounce that, really. I tried my very best. It's really so deep. I can't get... Only one woman that I know of who pronounced it, and she was surprised that she could pronounce it, and she says, I'm not going to do it again because it's too hard. That was our Hebrew teacher. Yes?
You were helping me.
Oh, that's who it was. That's right. Yeah, that's right. So does that kind of explain that a little bit? Now, who is this Amalek or Amalek? Amalek. Who is he? He is a descendant of whom?
Where are you at?
We're still in the 8th verse. 17th chapter, 8th verse.
Esau.
Okay. Now, ask yourself some questions. He is actually the grandson of Esau. And what was another name for Esau?
Red,
okay. In English is red. Edom. Not Adam. Or Edom. Or Edom. Anyway, what that refers to is, now listen very carefully. Many years ago, thousands of years ago, there was a certain mother of a very, very famous man. And his mama told him where Mount Sinai was. And since he was a very, very famous man and really obeyed his mother, he therefore came up and says, that's where it's at because mama said so. Mama said that's where Sinai is at. The mountain, Sinai, where Moses, the Ten Commandments are given. Did who the mama was? Constantine's mother. And Constantine was a pagan. I mean, that was an issue, an interesting concept. And so now we're talking about this grandson of the red man. Now, in what we call the Sinai Peninsula, ask yourself a question. In that place we call the Sinai Peninsula, was the descendants of Esau living there? No. Where were the descendants of Esau living? They're living east of Jordan and southward, what we call the, what kind of peninsula? Arabian Peninsula. And of course, the Apostle Paul says, that's where it's at. He says, Arabia. Sinai is in Arabia. He didn't say, and the Sinai Peninsula was never called Arabia. Now we have this red, remember? Red man, Red Sea. They entered into a land that belonged to the descendants of Esau, or close to it. Now all of a sudden, one of the grandsons comes and he goes to war against whom? Esau's grandson went against whom? Went to war against the house of Israel, right? Now, if you ever been or seen pictures of the Sinai Peninsula, where was there a valley anywhere near Mount Sinai, because that's where they're real close to, and where could you have an army and go to a war there? Go careful, it presents something to you. Most of you already know where I'm going on it, because you've heard it before. But I just want to go through this thing to know where Esau lived. He didn't live in the Sinai Peninsula, nor did his grandchildren live in the Sinai Peninsula. They lived in the land of their father, their grandfather. That's where they lived. Now we go on down. Now you stop and think about it, it's really interesting. Now the war was started. It was a one-day war, by the way. It didn't last very long. Remember, God, you're testing me. You want to prove me if I'm with you or not? I'll let you think about this one. What do you do? It's a very interesting thing. Verse 9. And Moses said unto Yoshua, we call him Joshua. choose out men, not the whole, all men, and go out and fight with Amalek. Tomorrow, see, God told him, I want you to go ahead, right? On that day, the people strived, quarreled, and wanted to see, is God with us or not with us? He's got to prove that he is with us. All right? And that was their statement. The leadership, primarily. Understand what I'm saying, because this is an issue which God said. It's a leadership of Israel, not the everyday person. They're probably doing like you were doing, trying to survive. It's a leadership God's always on the case of. And we'll talk about that as we keep going here. Because, well, let's go. He said here, you shall take, verse 5, he says, you will take the elders of Israel and with you. So he only took the elders with him because they were the ones that were striving and complaining. We kind of blame every Tom, Dick, and Harry, every descendant of Israel, every descendant of Abraham saying the same thing. It's a leadership. Look at our own country. We don't agree with the statements the President of the United States says, but when he says it, guess what? That is the words of the United States of America, whether you like it or not. Right? You can protest up one side and down the other, and it absolutely does nothing. You can complain, you can vote him in, vote him out, doesn't make a difference. He's still there. He's going to stay there until he is removed, or, more than likely, until he can no longer be president when time runs out. So now he says, Moses said to Joshua, verse 9, choose out the men, go fight. I will stand on top of the hill, we'll talk about the hill in a minute, with the rod of Elohim. The same rod that was used to turn the blood, water into blood, the same rod that was used to part the Red Sea, that same rod, he says, I have the rod of Elohim. We talked about that previously in the 15th chapter, right? When all of a sudden it's no longer Moses' rod. It belongs to God. I'm telling you this much. My personal opinion, Richard Age's personal opinion, when Moses was told to throw the rod down and it turned into a snake, right? They told him to pick it up by its tail and turn back into a snake. It was no longer Moses' rod or staff or whatever word you want to use. Now he has in his hand the power of God. And God increased more and more and more and more power unto Moses as time went by. And right now it's pretty quick. Rapidly increasing in power. Well, my son and I were asking, he says, curiosity, okay, when did Moses realize, or did he know, that when he held the rod up, and then he laid it down, he said, you know, he had to have good eyesight because God, you know, blessed Moses with a tremendous amount of stuff, including good eyesight. Could see the battle and see the people losing. And he laid it back up again. Oh, now Joshua's winning. Bring it out, Joshua's losing. Oh, and of course, you know, after a while, he was going to do that in the morning. He got tired. You want to hold a rod up like that? How many have been in the military? Men. Have you ever had to hold a rifle out there? And you hold it, and you better not drop it. And you're holding there for at least 5, 10, maybe 15 minutes, and all of a sudden your body starts going the direction of the weight because it's heavy now. You didn't get in trouble, but you got chewed out by the staff sergeant. I remember doing that, and it was very hard to do that. A 19-year-old kid weighing 135 pounds, imagine it wasn't that easy for me. You what? Anyway, this rod was used to strike the rock. Now, think of the time period here. This rod, God said, that turned water into blood. And this rod that parted the sea. And this rod, you're going to strike a rock. But before he struck the rock, he had to have this rod hold up. Now, God didn't tell him to do this. You see what God said to do this? Is there a word of God that said to do this? We can't find it, but Moses did it. Because the people were being attacked at a very interesting place called Rephidim. They're being attacked at Rephidim. Why is that so important? Why is that location so interesting? Why at that place? It was in a valley. In Rephidim, he was in a mountain. Simple as that. Rephidim. What this means is a place of rest. Plurality. They stays. Or resting places. This is where they rested. That means they stopped moving. They stayed there. And extremely close. A big area. And Amalek came to destroy them, go to war against them, in this place where it's named, that's your resting place. That's where you're going to stay for a while. And they stayed there for a long time. Over a year. Remember? They didn't leave this area until the end of the second year. I mean, the closing of the beginning of the second year. Now here he was. And there's two men. One is Haran, which has been translated as one who brings the light. Basically means the high priest is the one that was going to become the one who must keep the menorah constantly on, regardless who the high priest is. And so it was always the light, quote, light bringer or light producer, the one that brings to make sure the lights of the menorah was always on in the tabernacle, which comes up later in this, not this chapter, but later chapters. Now, his name, there's two definitions of it, and one didn't make sense to me whatsoever. Is actually, his name is Hur. Hur. Not her or who, Hur, but Hur. It's a hard sounding CH. It's a het and a vav and a resh. Now, it comes from another definition spelt the same way, but pronounced differently. One of them has to do with something like a boar or make it a hole in the ground like a viper. That didn't make sense to me in this one. The second one, they said they didn't know if it comes from this word or that word. So I took the one that said this word, not that word. Anyway, and it has to do with the color of a certain color. Actually, has to do with the presence of all colors. White. White is the presence of all colors. Right? So his name means someone who is white or glows white. Interesting. Later on, we'll find out one of his sons was the most important man to have a direct association with building of the tabernacle. Everything went through him. Very important man. We'll get there when we get there. Now let's go on down. Of course, it says there, verse 14, that his hands were very heavy. And they took a stone and put it under him so he not only was able to sit down, he was standing up for it. And then Aaron and Hur stayed by, that is, kept there, they kept close to him, they kept holding on to and making sure that his arms stayed where they're supposed to stay. And then, of course, the war was over with by the time the sun went down. That's what it says here. Yeah, let's see. One more comment. One thing I want to say here. Remember, a lot of knowledge from another group put in words that were not really written there in the first place because it's behind sight, it's hindsight, like we did in the book of Genesis. How could Abraham possibly chase them all the way up to the land of Dan when Dan didn't exist, or the land didn't exist? Okay? We know that part. So someone came in and tried to explain what the rural place was where Abraham went. Remember, he killed four kings, four empires, wiped them, destroyed them, they didn't come back again. And anyway, it says here in the 14th chapter, and Yahweh said unto Moses, now this was Yahweh said to Moses. It wasn't Moses decided to do this. So it gives us a hint that Moses was told to go up there, hold that rod up by God himself. Although it doesn't say that before. Now we have it afterwards, where now God is saying to Moses, write this for a memorial and a book, and rehearsal it in the ears of Joshua. So Joshua keeps knowing. God, Joshua, where was Joshua during the battle? He's down there fighting him, right? He had no idea Moses was up there holding the rod up. He's busy in war. He wouldn't look around and say, okay, it's up. Let's keep fighting. Whoop, it went down. What happened? What up? He didn't say that. He was just to fight. Now, this is for Joshua. Tell Joshua what happened. For Joshua to know. That later comes in time when you go to the book of Joshua, where God says, I'll make you as fearful and honorable and respected as Moses himself. Now, Joshua didn't know that at this point in time. But later on, that happens. So where are we at? We are camped in a place called Rephidim. That's where they're at. This place where they're going to stay. And they're going to remain there until God took them out of there. Now talk about this rock. Remember the rock? Now we know that quote, very careful with my quotes because words can be added and plus and minus, interpreted the way you want, so I'm very careful with it. Quote, the lamb was supposed to be, or is interpreted to be, the Yahshua himself, right? And I went through this on the 15th chapter, 16th chapter. And I said, what did the lamb, each one of the houses, have to kill a lamb? What was it for? Keep them from being killed by the wrath of God. So, the lamb is, it protects one or prevents one from being killed, even though, quote, the lamb didn't know the people they were saving from death, end of quote. Now, in the case of the Messiah and God, he knew that lamb, the Lamb of God, knew who he was protecting, and they weren't people full of righteousness, holiness, or goodness, or blessedness. They were the ones he said, those I don't want to kill. Protect them. He says, okay. From what? From death. Okay, I got them. They won't die. And that's the work. Now this rock, it was struck, again later on, before the Ten Commandments were given. That's fascinating to pay attention to. It may mean nothing, but yet it may mean this. If that rock that was struck before the Ten Commandments were given, that rock that was struck before the Ten Commandments were given, that followed them spiritually, as Apostle Paul said. He didn't say the Ten Commandments followed them. He says that rock followed them. Why was it necessary for the rock to be struck? Why was it necessary for it to split apart? Why was it necessary for even water to come out? Because they were thirsty? Gives you some questions, don't you? What kind of spirit? Keep going. You almost got it. It's even greater than that. Apostle Paul goes through the book of Romans, explaining it very carefully. Spirit is life. When you have the Spirit of God, you have life. And so now, this water which comes out, he gave them life before he gave them the covenant. Understand that? Now, Apostle Paul says, while we were still at war with the Creator of heaven and earth, what did the Creator of heaven and earth do? Took his son's life. And took his son's life, and it gives us the life of the Spirit. Even though we are at war when this took place. You don't think, I never was at war with God. I never quarreled with God. I never said anything against God. Well, that's good. You're more of a man than Moses is. I'll tell you that much. Do you understand what I'm saying? You don't have to agree with me. I just want you to put it in perspective. That's very fascinating that it was done before the covenant was issued. Now, to get into farther into the next two chapters, all the way up to the 20th chapter, we're going to learn something from what's going on here. So keep in mind that that rock was the water. It's a rock that holds the water. It's a rock that holds life. It's a rock that holds cleanliness. It's the rock that holds purity. This is the rock that matters. Sometimes it's really hard to look and see what this rock that's split open has anything to do with Messiah. And Apostle Paul says, it has everything to do with him. We just have to figure out, and God willing, to see a picture. To see a picture. How can that rock follow them? And we ourselves, quote, may say, God is my rock. He is my salvation. Well, that rock was the Messiah. That salvation was the Messiah who saved you and me from the death sentence. Right? And now it is he who's doing the work within us as the water, as we will see, did two things physically to the house and people of Israel before the Ten Commandments were given. The water was used to do two things, not just to drink, because that's not what the issue was about. Was to do two things prior to the covenant. Are you ready to hear it? When we get there, we'll get there. I'm not there today. Because we've got to go through the 18th chapter first, which is a little odd because here we have Moses' father-in-law showing up in the scene. We'll talk about that next week. Okay. So it was kind of a short session today. Yes.
I think it's quite fascinating that this passage we just looked at in Exodus 17 factors so heavily in Hebrews chapters 3 and 4. Because it goes back and quotes several times about this passage from Psalm 95 about, you know, The Lord swore in his wrath, you will not enter my rest. And when you go to Psalm 95, what is it referring to but, you know, Massa and Meribah? And one of the great lessons there is that who are you striving with? And whose rest are you looking to enter? And
yes.
One of the things that you go through all the way through Hebrews 3 and into 4, it talks about what is actually giving you the rest. And it starts segueing into this idea of the high priest who is acquainted with who we are as people and our failings and such. And that is how we enter the rest, the true rest that God gives us. Not by how great we are, because it goes through great lengths there in chapters 3 and 4 to discuss how basically pathetic we are in trying to impress God.
Which never works.
Exactly.
See, I'm not the only weird one around here, see? Jeff got weird ideas. Oh. Okay. Break time.